This is Ann Weller on behalf of the Triangle Radio Reading Service. And for the next half hour, I will be sharing nutrition information with you. This information is selected from the Nutrition Action Health Letter, a publication of the Center for Science in the Public Interest, based in Washington, D.C. The Center for Science in the Public Interest was founded in 1971 by three scientists who wanted to apply their academic training to the solving of social problems. It conducts innovative research and programs in health and nutrition and provides consumers with current information about their health and well-being. An independent nonprofit consumer health group, the center promotes honest food labeling and advertising, safer and more nutritious foods, and pro-health alcohol policies. The center's work is supported by Nutrition Action Health Letter subscribers and by foundation grants. It accepts no government or industry funding, and Nutrition Action Health Letter, which was first published in 1974, accepts no advertising. Nutrition News is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. Please use the information presented in this broadcast in consultation with your personal physician. Today's Nutrition News broadcast focuses on the cover story of the January-February 2010 issue of Nutrition Action Health Letter. The report, entitled Sugar Overload, Curbing America's Sweet Tooth, is authored by Bonnie Liebman, Director of Nutrition for Nutrition Action Health Letter. America is on a sugar binge. Between 1970 and 2005, our intake of added sugars, cane and beet sugar, high fructose corn syrup, dextrose, and other sweeteners jumped 20%. We now consume 22 to 30 teaspoons of added sugar a day. And that's 350 to 475 empty calories that most people cannot afford. A growing body of research suggests that added sugars or sugar-sweetened beverages boost the risk of disease. We know that sugars contribute to obesity, which in turn increases the risk of cardiovascular disease and type 2 diabetes, says Linda Van Horn, who chairs the American Heart Association's Nutrition Committee. I'd like to begin with a very simple review of sugars. Table sugar, or sucrose, is broken down in the body and to some extent in foods to half fructose and half glucose. And at that point, it is essentially identical to high fructose corn syrup. So what led the American Heart Association to issue its new scientific statement on dietary sugars, intake, and cardiovascular health? The association cited the, quote, worldwide pandemic of obesity and cardiovascular disease in explaining its heightened concerns about the adverse effects of excessive consumption of sugars. Added sugars have become such a predominant feature of the American diet that we cannot help but recognize their major contribution to excess calories, explains Dr. Van Horn. The average American swallows 350 to 475 calories worth of added sugars each day, depending on the type of data used to estimate the intakes. Exactly what are added sugars? They include high fructose corn syrup, ordinary table sugar, honey, agave syrup, and all other sweeteners with calories. In this report, The word sugars refers to all of them. To hear some critics talk, high fructose corn syrup is the real villain, and table sugar gets a free pass. But in fact, high fructose corn syrup is roughly half fructose and half glucose, as is table sugar, or sucrose, once it breaks down in the body. And although the fructose half may cause some problems, the glucose half causes others. So, if there is a villain, it's all of them. Added sugars are added sugars, says Rachel Johnson, a professor of nutrition at the University of Vermont, who chaired the Heart Association panel that issued the new sugars advice. So what's wrong with sugars? Well, for starters, they are not good for your teeth, especially if they come in sticky foods. And here are some other reasons to cut back. Number one, you cannot afford the empty calories. The American Heart Association based its advice on what scientists call discretionary calories. That is, how much room you have for empty calories once you have eaten all the vegetables, fruit, lean protein, low-fat dairy, whole grains, and other foods you need to stay healthy. It's like discretionary income that people can spend on luxuries once they have paid their bills. There is no question that sugars are a major culprit in obesity because they are a source of empty calories that most Americans do not need, says Dr. Van Horn. They have no nutritional benefit whatsoever. The fact is that most people simply cannot afford a 500-calorie scone or a 600-calorie white chocolate mocha when they stop at Starbucks. Added sugars either crowd out healthy foods or they make you fat if you eat them in addition to healthy foods, explains Frank Sachs, a professor of cardiovascular disease prevention at the Harvard School of Public Health in Boston. So, the Heart Association turned to the discretionary calorie allowances calculated by the U.S. Department of Agriculture. If you'd like to find yours, go to My Pyramid, all one word, mypyramid.gov. A typical woman who should shoot for 1,800 calories a day, for example, would need about 1,600 calories a day from vegetables, fruits, lean protein, dairy foods, and whole grains to get all the nutrients that she needs. That leaves about 200 calories to spend, like discretionary income, on whatever she wants. We said, okay, half of that discretionary calorie allowance can come from solid fats, and half can come from added sugars. That's about 100 calories from added fats and 100 calories from added sugars per day for women. A typical man should shoot for 2,200 calories a day. And he gets about 150 calories to spend on both added fats and added sugars. Solid fats include not just butter or margarine, but the extra fat you get if you choose dairy foods like milk, cheese, yogurt, or ice cream that are not fat-free. Poultry with skin, and cakes, cookies, pies, and other sweets that aren't fat-free. So unless you eat mostly fat-free foods, Your 100-calorie solid fat allowance is going to disappear quickly. And guess what happens to your added sugars allowance if you want a glass of wine or beer? It has been shocking to some people when I have said that we've been fairly conservative, because if you're consuming alcohol regularly, you should be having even less added sugar, notes Johnson. And if you want more sugar, you can always burn more calories. What I tell people who cannot live with the added sugars recommendation is that they need to move more, says Dr. Johnson. Then you can have more sugar. Another reason to limit added sugars is that sugar-sweetened beverages promote obesity. We are eating 20% more added sugars now than we did in 1970. What's largely responsible for the leap in sugars intake? Soft drinks, says Dr. Johnson. In 1965, Americans got an average of 12% of their calories from beverages. In 2001, beverages accounted for 21% of their calories. Soft drinks are the number one source of added sugars in Americans' diets, says Dr. Johnson. And sugary liquids may make us fatter because they do not curb our appetite for more food. When you give people liquid calories before they eat a meal, they do not compensate by eating less at the meal or later, in the same way they do for calories from solid food, notes Dr. Johnson. In a classic study at Purdue University, researchers gave 15 young adults 450 calories of sugars each day as either a liquid, say a soft drink, or a solid, jelly beans. After 1 month on the jelly beans, the volunteers compensated by eating less of other foods, so they gained no weight. But on the soft drinks, they actually ate slightly more food than before. That, plus the calories in the soft drinks, led them to gain weight. And in a recent trial that lasted 1.5 years, people who cut back on liquid calories lost more weight than those who cut the same number of solid calories. I keep telling people, if you're trying to cut back on added sugars, look at what you're drinking, says Dr. Johnson. What's more, in a study of 51,000 women, those who went from drinking regular soda no more than once a week to at least once a day gained the most weight after 4 years. And it's not just soda pop. If you look at consumption data, soft drinks are leveling off, but other sugar-sweetened beverages, like sports drinks, energy drinks, sweetened teas, are taking off, Dr. Johnson notes. Just walk down the supermarket aisles. An entire one is filled with soft drinks, and another is filled with other sugar-sweetened beverages that have a health halo. Sugar-sweetened drinks may also raise the risk of heart disease. Sugars have, for many years, been considered neutral in their impact on cardiovascular disease, says Northwestern University's Linda Van Horn. But in an obese environment like ours, we cannot turn a blind eye to added sugars that contribute to excess calorie intake. Clearly, excess weight is not good for the heart. A big belly is one part of the metabolic syndrome, which raises the risk of heart disease and diabetes. But sugar-sweetened beverages may promote heart disease whether or not they make you gain weight. When Harvard researchers tracked more than 88,000 women for 24 years, they found that regardless of weight, those women who drank at least 2 sugar-sweetened beverages a day had a 20% higher risk of heart disease than those who drank less than 1 sugar-sweetened beverage a month. Our data suggest that soft drinks increase the risk above and beyond their impact on weight, notes study co-author Joanne Manson, a professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School. And when scientists tracked 4,000 men and women in the Framingham Heart Study for 4 years, those who drank at least 1 soft drink a day had a 44% higher risk of being diagnosed with the metabolic syndrome than those who drank less than 1 soft drink a day, regardless of how much they weighed. Why else would sugar-sweetened drinks raise the risk of heart attacks? One possibility is that the fructose in added sugars, like high fructose corn syrup and table sugar, raises levels of fats called triglycerides, and higher than normal triglycerides are another sign of metabolic syndrome. So you see, cholesterol is not the only thing in the blood that's linked to heart attacks. People with higher than normal triglycerides, at least 150, are also at risk, especially if their triglycerides soar after a meal. And fructose raises triglycerides after meals. For example, researchers at the University of Minnesota fed 24 men and women a diet that got 17% of its calories from either glucose or fructose. And that's a high dose, since Americans average 16% of their calories from added sugars, roughly half of it from fructose and half of it from glucose. After 6 weeks, triglyceride levels throughout the day were 32% higher when the men, but not the women, ate the high fructose diet. Peter Havel and colleagues at the University of California in Davis got similar results when they studied 32 overweight or obese men and women over the age of 40. Participants got a hefty 25% of their calories from beverages sweetened with either fructose or glucose for 10 weeks. And once again, blood levels of triglycerides after a meal were higher on fructose than on glucose. It is a strong and consistent effect, says researcher Kimber Stanhope, who works with Havel. Triglycerides rose more in men, but they also rose in women, notes Dr. Stanhope, possibly because the women in our study were older and heavier than those in the earlier study. Why would people on a high fructose diet have higher triglycerides than people on a high glucose diet? When you consume a large dose of glucose, the liver does not pull much of it in if you don't need the calories. In contrast, fructose ends up in the liver whether you need the calories or not. The liver will take up nearly the entire amount of fructose, says Dr. Stanhope. Very little of the fructose stays in the bloodstream. What does the liver do with all that fructose? Well, it starts converting some of the fructose into fat, Dr. Stanhope explains, and much of this fat gets sent into the bloodstream, resulting in higher levels of triglycerides. And that would explain why large doses of fructose boost triglyceride levels in the bloodstream and possibly in the liver. Would smaller doses do the same? We're testing lower doses right now, says Dr. Stanhope. We are studying over 200 younger people, so it will take a while. Another reason to diminish your consumption of added sugars is that sugar-sweetened beverages may promote diabetes. When researchers tracked roughly 91,000 women for 8 years, those who drank at least one sugar-sweetened soft drink a day had an 83% higher risk of type 2 diabetes than those who drank less than one a month. When the scientists took weight out of the equation, soda drinkers had a 40% higher risk. Weight gain appears to account for half of the increased risk, says Dr. Manson. What could explain the other half? Well, sugar-sweetened soft drinks might also increase the risk of type 2 diabetes because they are high in rapidly absorbable carbohydrates, she suggests. High fructose corn syrup is roughly half fructose, which goes largely to the liver, so it does not raise blood sugar. But the glucose half of high fructose corn syrup heads straight to the bloodstream. Consumption of sugar-sweetened soft drinks causes a fast and dramatic increase in blood sugar levels, says Dr. Manson. And in our studies, people who eat foods that raise blood sugar levels have a higher risk for diabetes. Fructose may also boost visceral fat. In the University of California at Davis study, the 32 men and women gained about the same weight, that is roughly 3 pounds, after 10 weeks, whether they drank beverages sweetened with fructose or glucose. But there were differences. The fructose eaters, especially the men, gained more deep abdominal or visceral fat than the glucose eaters. And that is critical because visceral fat is linked to a higher risk of heart disease and diabetes. In contrast, the glucose eaters gained more subcutaneous fat, which is just below the skin and is less likely to raise the risk of diabetes and heart disease. Since this study was the first to see fructose's effect on visceral fat, Dr. Stanhope notes, it would be good to see the result confirmed in other studies. Another new finding, the fructose drinkers had a drop in insulin sensitivity, and reduced sensitivity to insulin is linked to a higher risk of heart disease and diabetes. But it is too early to know if Dr. Stanhope's results will hold up in future studies. If fructose makes insulin less efficient, no one knows how. It may be due to an increase in the amount of triglycerides stored in the liver, speculates Dr. Stanhope, which could then lead to a chain of events that causes insulin receptors to perform less effectively. Fructose may also raise the risk of gout. Gout hurts. If your blood has too much uric acid, the excess ends up in joints, especially those of the big toe, where it can cause excruciating pain. Obesity is the major risk factor for gout because it's so common and it substantially increases the risk, says Gary Curran, an associate professor of medicine at the Harvard Medical School. But fructose is also a culprit. We know that fructose increases uric acid and that uric acid causes gout, says Dr. Curran. So, in a study of roughly 46,000 men, those who got at least 12% of their calories from fructose were nearly twice as likely to be diagnosed with gout over the next 12 years as those who got less than 7% of their calories from fructose. And after we adjusted for weight and all the other risk factors for gout that we know about, people with higher intakes of fructose had substantially higher risk of gout, Dr. Kern explains. At least that's true in men, who are far more likely to get the disease anyway. And we are just starting to look at women, says Dr. Kern. Fructose may also promote overeating. Leptin is a hormone made by fat cells. It is supposed to make you stop eating. Leptin tells your brain that you've got enough calories on board, says Robert Lustig, a professor of clinical pediatrics at the University of California in San Francisco. He served on the Heart Association sugar panel. When you don't get that signal, you're still hungry. When researchers fed rats a huge dose of fructose, 60% of their diet, for 6 months, the animals became resistant to leptin. That is, leptin injections failed to curb their appetite. Obese people can also be leptin resistant. They have lots of leptin, but it does not work, explains Dr. Lustig. Over time, a high fructose diet blocks the leptin signal in the brain. So leptin cannot extinguish hunger and cannot extinguish reward. The result, you keep eating. In fact, when the rats were allowed to eat as much palatable food as they wanted, they gained nearly twice as much weight as rats that got no fructose. But so far, it's not clear what happens when people eat fructose in less excessive amounts. Another reason to limit your consumption of added sugars is that minimizing added sugars keeps a lid on blood pressure. There is a possibility that sugar raises blood pressure, says Frank Sachs of the Harvard School of Public Health. But it is far from definitive. However, what is clear is that there is little place for sugar in a diet that's designed to lower blood pressure. And finally, most sugary foods are high in sugars and low in nutrients. So be discriminating, suggests the University of Vermont's Rachel Johnson. People enjoy sweet taste, and if you are discriminating, it has a role in a healthy diet. But they're called discretionary calories for a reason, she adds. Use them to enhance the palatability of already nutritious foods. I'd rather see someone consume added sugars in a flavored yogurt or a whole grain breakfast cereal, or by putting maple syrup on oatmeal, than to consume them in a donut or a soft drink. So shoot for 100 calories, or 6.5 teaspoons, or 25 grams a day of added sugars if you are a woman, and shoot for 150 calories, or 9.5 teaspoons, or 38 grams a day of added sugar if you are a man. Don't drink sugar-sweetened beverages. Limit fruit juices to no more than one cup a day. Limit all added sugars, including high fructose corn syrup, cane or beet sugar, evaporated cane juice, brown rice syrup, agave syrup, and honey. And don't worry about the naturally occurring sugar in fruit, milk, and plain yogurt. We've reached the conclusion of this month's segment of Nutrition News. Please join me at the same time next month. I hope that you've enjoyed the show. I'm Ann Weller, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. This program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience, and it is readily available as a podcast.